As I approached this study of holidays, I realized that there were some expectations that people would have, and there are some emotional issues that we're talking about. Now, what Ronnie talked about was an emotional issue, but it was on a different level from the level that I think we're on now as we talk about holidays. I think the anticipation is that we're going to talk about religious holidays, and that's basically true. And probably the anticipation of some is we're going to talk about Christmas, and that is not true. It is true there will be some references to Christmas, but this topic is not just about Christmas, and I think you'll know what I mean as we develop the subject. There's no way that the presentation on holidays is going to please everyone or that you're going to agree with it. I suppose that's the case with every topic we discuss, but on a topic that is so personally emotional, that will certainly be the case today. What I want to do this morning is to present some material that hopefully will stimulate you to be able to evaluate your own judgment and will perhaps help you in reaching a broader understanding of this topic. Everyone will not agree. There are many shades of meaning, many shades of beliefs, and many shades of participation in what we term as religious holidays. So some will agree with parts, some with all, some with none, and we just have to accept that as we begin. But I have a genuine interest in reaching a better understanding of this subject. I accepted it reluctantly after a couple of discussions. I understand in the meantime others were approached and nobody else wanted it, so here we go. And that's where we are today. I did have a desire to understand more about the subject because I've done some reading, as most of you have. I had never perhaps gone into depth as I have in preparing for this study. So it's been beneficial for me, and I have tried to approach it openly. I've tried to approach it objectively, and I hope that you can do that this morning as we talk. If you can free your mind from your preconceived ideas and prejudices that we all bring to a subject of this nature, I believe that we can learn. You may not change your opinion, and that's fine. That really is not my purpose today. Our purpose is information and stimulation. It is not to convince anybody that you ought to believe in something or that you ought not to believe in something else. As I looked at the subject, I first decided I would not go into history because I felt everyone knows the history. But as I pursued the subject, I realized that there were some things in the histories that I was not aware of, and I thought perhaps would be helpful. And also, I found it necessary to include some history of some of the holidays so that I could make a parallel with history of other holidays. So I am going to include some history in this topic, and if you know that already, just bear with us as we go through it. As I thought about the subject of holidays through the years, I've wondered why. And I hope that that's a question that a lot of you have had too. Why is it that we have a problem over holidays? Why is it that some brethren are so violently opposed to the celebration of one holiday or several holidays? They accept others. Why is it that other people don't have any problem with any of the holidays? We have a broad range of beliefs about this, and there must be a reason. So I hope that we can approach it from that standpoint. Some are against participating in holidays of any sort. Some are against participating only in Christmas, and they're very emotional about it. The thing that disturbs me, and as we conclude the talk, we really want to get into this, but the thing that disturbs me is the attitude that some have as we consider the subject of holidays, especially those who do not believe in any kind of participation. I see an arrogance. I see an aloofness that I do not believe is Christ-like as we consider our relationship with other people. So some are against holidays, and they condemn anybody who is not against all holidays or against the holidays that they themselves cannot participate in or cannot recognize. That opinion and that attitude is one that I hope we can examine today and perhaps reach a better understanding of what our attitude might be. I want us to understand today something more about these holidays and about what our attitude in relationship to them is. I'm not interested today in presenting what is popular to preach. I'm not interested in presenting to you what is generally accepted or generally believed. I want to present to you the result of some study that I've done that I hope will be helpful to you. I want to think rationally today and intelligently about the subject of holidays and specifically religious holidays. Now, I would like to just mention one to sort of get it out of the way. On the list was Independence Day or the 4th of July, and I didn't really go into any study of the non-religious type holidays. As far as I was able to read, there's no religious connotation at all, nor paganistic connotation, nor anything else to the Independence Day celebration. It is a national holiday for this country. Other countries have it too, of course at different times, but they do celebrate that, and I found nothing that would have any tie to what we need to talk about today with that holiday. I hope that we can consider the points and listen to them carefully today. If the points are true, I hope we will use them to stimulate our future study. If they're not true, please be kind and help me with my own understanding. Now let us get into some of the histories of some of the holidays that we're all concerned about. I've selected four to begin with to present for your consideration. There are others, but these are four that we might call the big four, and we want to look at them first. First is Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is a holiday, of course, celebrated on February 14th and usually associated with love and romance. It was first celebrated in honor of two martyrs in the Roman Catholic Church, each with the name of Saint Valentine, and each martyred on February 14th. One of these men is supposed to have died in Rome, and the other in a city outside of Rome, about 60 miles, and some people even believe they were the same man who worked outside of Rome but was martyred in Rome. That's of no consequence at all. But the Catholics are the one who designated Valentine's Day. The customs now associated with the holiday have nothing to do with the martyrs. There appears to be no tie in that. The customs probably go back to an ancient Roman festival called Lupercalia, which was celebrated on February 15th. This festival was proclaimed in honor of Juno, who was the Roman goddess of women and marriage, and of Pan, who was the god of nature. Lupercalia was, and I'm quoting here, a lover's festival for young people. Young men and women chose partners for the festival by drawing names by chance from a box. After this, they paired off, became better acquainted, sometimes even ended up being married after that association. But it was in the 400s that one of the popes of Rome changed this pagan festival into St. Valentine's Day and changed the date to February the 14th. Many customs and beliefs since the beginning of Valentine's Day have developed, and most of them center around love and the choice of a partner in marriage and those kinds of things. The sending of cards goes back only as far as the English poet Geoffrey Chaucer. Now, the next holiday is Easter. Originally, the word Easter was the Saxon word Estra, and she was the goddess of spring. Or some write that it may have been the word Estur, referring to a festival of spring, and there's not any proof about either way on that. The celebration came to be used in reference to what the world calls a Christian celebration referring to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. I'm quoting, by the 8th century, Anglo-Saxons had adopted the name to designate the celebration of Christ's resurrection. It is the most important holy day of the Christian religion, the World Book says. People attend churches and take part in religious ceremonies. The World Book very directly says that the story of Easter comes from the Bible. The reference, of course, is to the account in the Gospels of the body of Jesus disappearing from his tomb and then being discovered to have been resurrected. That's where the angel appeared announcing he is risen. Several symbols have developed in connection with this holiday. The cross, of course, is a symbol of the crucifixion of Jesus and of his triumph over death. The lamb makes reference to the Jewish Passover. You may not know a lamb was a part of this, but this is what the historians tell us. Eggs, and we do know about eggs. This was the symbol used to suggest life and the coming back to life, being in the spring, and it was the resurrection of life. The Egyptians used eggs. The Persians used eggs that were often dyed, and they were given to their emperor, and they were given to others as gifts. And there are various beliefs about, you know, the powers and so on of these eggs. And there were rabbits in olden times. Sometimes children are taught to believe that the Easter Bunny brings them Easter eggs. And that's a belief that probably originated in Germany. Now, one legend says that a poor woman dyed some eggs during a famine and hid them in a nest as an Easter gift for her children. Just as the children discovered the nest, a big rabbit leaped away, and the story spread that the rabbit had brought the Easter eggs, and that's where the legend comes from. I suppose we're not sure about that, but that's what some historians say. A third holiday is Halloween. Halloween means hallowed or holy evening, and it is associated with All Hallows' Eve. It takes place on the day before All Saints' Day, which is November 1st. The holiday comes from the rites of the Druids celebrating the Day of Samhain, when the Lord of the Death called together the souls of the wicked who had died during the past year. Celtic tribes who practiced the religion of the Druids brought this celebration to the British Isles. These people believed that ghosts and spirits and witches and elves and so on harmed them, and they harmed people on Halloween, and it was also used by the Druids as a celebration of the end of the summer. The theme of the harvest runs through modern Halloween celebrations, and that too goes back to the old Druidic celebrations. And this was based upon, the Druids got the idea of the harvest idea from an old Roman god called Pomona, who was the goddess of fruit. And this was carried over to Britain, and it was used there among the British people. It was common for horses and humans to be sacrificed during these celebrations. Men, mostly criminals, were imprisoned in wicker and thatch cages shaped like animals or giants. The Druid priest set fire to the cages, and these were burned to death. During the Middle Ages in Europe, black cats were thrown into the flames in wicker cages because they were thought to be friends of the witches. And this was the time, too, when it was believed that witches rode through the skies on their broomsticks. On Halloween, these witches were said to dance on the hilltops with goblins and imps while the devil played the bagpipes or castanets made from dead men's bones. This was also a time when young women used various fortune-telling techniques to determine who their husband would be. After the spread of Christianity, enemies of the church made fun of the Christians. And one Halloween, they worshipped the devil and set skulls up and pretended to have altars, and they painted profane crosses on church walls and so on, various destructive things, and of course that's a carryover to the pranks and tricks of Halloween. But the Roman Catholic Church transformed this day into a, quote, Christian feast day in the 700s when they named November 1st as All Saints' Day, and so Halloween being the day before, it was carried over. Many superstitions and beliefs have developed from these original beginnings. The fourth that we want to look at is Christmas. Scholars do not know, and we know this, the exact date of Christ. For more than 300 years, people observed his birthday at different times in the year, and there did not seem to be any concern about it. But in A.D. 354, Pope Liberius of Rome ordered the people to celebrate on December 25th. He probably chose this date because the people of Rome already observed it as the feast of Saturn, celebrating the birthday of the sun as the light of the world. The Christians of Egypt celebrated Christmas on January 26th. Many members of the Eastern Orthodox Church still do that. Various symbols have arisen in connection with this holiday. There is St. Nicholas, which goes back to one of the bishops in Asia Minor, back to the 300s. There is Santa Claus, which the World Book says is distinctly an American tradition. Many of the habits and the characteristics and the powers and so on of Santa Claus were given to him by Americans, not by, back in pagan times and so on. The Christmas tree is another symbol that has arisen, and there are a lot of beliefs and emotional beliefs about the subject of the Christmas tree among our own people. It, again, goes back to the Middle Ages, it goes back beyond that, and even back to pre-Christian times. The star is another symbol. Lights that are placed on houses and trees and in various places are symbols. Martin Luther is said to have begun the use of lights. Christmas cards, the Yule log, mistletoe, and you might even think of some others that are associated with Christmas, other symbols that are associated with Christmas. Now, these are the four that I wanted to lay out for you first as far as the historical part of this is concerned. Now I want to also consider with you some other holidays that are not generally considered to be religious. And will you bear with me carefully as we look at these. The first is Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a holiday that originated in the United States, although it is celebrated in Canada too. And the idea for Thanksgiving probably came from Great Britain. There was another day that was somewhat similar over there, the historians tell us. It's a time of feasting and prayer for the blessings received for the year. The World Book says the first Thanksgiving Day were harvest festivals, or days for thanking God for plentiful crops. For this reason, the holiday still takes place in the fall after the crops have been gathered. One of the first Thanksgiving observances in America was entirely religious and was not and did not involve feasting. That's a quotation from the World Book. I use various encyclopedias for this history rather than using the tracts that some of you have written. I felt we needed to go back beyond that. So Collier's and Encyclopedia Americana, World Book, and so on are where these came from. I want to repeat that quote. One of the first Thanksgiving observances in America was entirely religious and did not involve feasting. On December 4, 1619, 39 English settlers arrived at Berkeley Plantation on the James River near what is now Charles City, Virginia. The group's charter required that the day of arrival be observed yearly as a day of thanksgiving to God. The first Thanksgiving in this country took place less than a year after the people at the Plymouth Colony settled there. The first winter in Massachusetts was bitter, and they lost more than half their people. And then summer came, and that summer they made a crop. And as a result of that, the governor of the province in the summer of 1621 declared that there would be a Thanksgiving celebration, and it was a three-day feast, and included in that 3 days was Thanksgiving Day. And this was its purpose. Its purpose was prayer and celebration. It was a totally religious holiday for those people. It was not detached from religion, and I repeat that because I think most of us have the idea that it was strictly a secular point in the beginning, and we use that to make some distinctions that are not valid. The point is, it was begun as a religious celebration, just as some of the Catholic celebrations were begun as such. The next one, and I have three in this grouping, the next one is New Year's Day. From the earliest of times, all nations have celebrated New Year's Day. And the different cultures, the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Jewish, the Mohammedan, and the Roman all began their New Year's Day, their New Year's at different times and consequently had different times of celebration. But thousands of years ago, the Egyptians celebrated the New Year about the middle of June, and this was the time that the Nile River usually overflowed its banks. But other cultures celebrated at different times. In ancient Rome, the first day of the year was given over to honoring Janus, the god of gates and doors, and of beginnings and endings, and that's a quote. That's the celebration that the Romans gave New Year's Day. The month of January was named after this god, Janus. Many people brought gifts to the Roman emperor to wish him well on this day, the giving of gifts in connection with New Year's Day. In Persia, many gave eggs to their friends, symbolizing the beginning of new life. This custom meant the same thing as what we have come to know as turning over a new leaf at the beginning of the year. That's where it came from. The custom of bringing gifts to the emperor was later brought over to England, and it was practiced there. New Year's Day was a holy day. New Year's Day was a holy day in what was termed the Christian Church. A.D. 437 it was declared, and it was called the Feast of Circumcision. This custom was brought over from paganism and, of course, from Judaism. At first, parties were not allowed on this day because the pagans had followed that custom of having parties. But later, that restriction was dropped. The third that I want to consider in this grouping is birthdays. Because New Year's Day Because New Year's Day is a, quote, Christian holy day, many people begin it by going to church. But it is also a day to visit friends and relatives and to exchange gifts. the World Book tells us. This is the oldest, or one of the oldest, holidays that we know about. It's more than 5,000 years old, and it was used as a time of celebration, of worshiping a god as a religious type thing, and carried over into the Christian age. Now, birthdays. Holidays and birthdays, a book put out by the World Book says that the idea of a birthday being a special day goes back thousands of years, even to the time when people believed that good or bad spirits could help a person on that special day. So when a person had a birthday, friends and relatives gathered to protect him or her. That was its purpose. That's where the birthday party came from. The friends gathered in the home to keep out the evil spirits and to protect them on that particular day. Birthday candles came from ancient Greece, where many gods and goddesses were worshipped, and Artemis, the goddess of the moon, was one of these. Each month, the Greeks brought cakes to her temple to worship her. The cakes were round, like a full moon, symbolizing the full moon, round birthday cakes, and because the moon glows with light, the cakes were decorated with lighted candles. And there's a part of the history of birthdays. I have a little more on birthdays. This is a copy and it's bad, so bear with me as I work through it. The custom of observing birthdays was very ancient and widely extended. In Persia, they were celebrated with peculiar honor and banquets, and in Egypt, the king's birthday was observed with great pomp. No reference is made in the scripture to the celebration of birthdays by the Jews themselves, although the language of Jeremiah 20 would seem to indicate that such occasions were joyfully remembered. By most commentators, the feasts mentioned in Job chapter 1 are thought to have been birthday festivals. But Deleuze doesn't agree with that. He believes them to have been gatherings in the home of one of the brothers. The feast that is commemorative of Herod's birthday, Matthew 14 and 6, may have been in honor of his birth, or it may have been in honor of his ascension. It is not known for sure. The later Jews regarded the celebration of birthdays as a part of idolatrous worship. That's the later Jews. They regarded it as a part of idolatrous worship. But in the early church, birthdays were applied to the festival of martyrs, the days on which they suffered in this world and went on to the world to come. They lost their lives, and that was celebrated by those who remained. So there is some historical information about birthdays. Now I want to try to put this in perspective. We've gone through it fairly quickly. There's a lot more that we could say and that I'm sure you know about. But we've presented, I think, enough for your consideration. Now this doesn't really get us very far, except it lays the foundation and gives us some background that we might begin to make some rational judgments or evaluations on, and that's what we need to do at this time. Now, of course, Christmas is the one that everybody is anxious about, at least those who have said anything to me. We sit on the edge of our seats about Christmas because it is something that people some people have enjoyed in the past, and they no longer do. Some still do. There are all kinds of beliefs attached with the idea of Christmas. But I would like for you to put in perspective some of this information. I see no difference in the history of Christmas and in the history of any of these other holidays. I see no difference in the history of Christmas and in the history of Halloween. We had a meeting here a while back. We opened a new building that was a great work that we'd been involved in. One of the local churches had a Halloween party during our meeting. You know, I don't see any difference in that. I see no difference in the celebration of Christmas than I do in the celebration of New Year's, based on the history. Based on the history. Nobody worries about New Year's. We have New Year's meetings when we do the same thing the world does, and that is some give gifts. We all generally go to a worship service on New Year's, and that goes a long way back thousands of years, if we want to trace it to that, and if we want to tie it to that. I see no difference in the celebration of Christmas and in the celebration of birthdays. The history is the same. The facts are different, but the principle is there. The history is the same. They all generally go back to times gone before. They go back to paganism. They go back to Judaism, they go back to Roman Catholicism. They have various backgrounds and various histories, but they all blend together when you put the histories together. Now, various reasons have been given for not participating in Christmas activities. Some say it's paganistic because of where it began. It did begin in paganism. There's no question about that. It did begin there. The Roman Catholics toyed with it, and other groups have too. Some say it was celebrated by the Roman Catholics, who named it after Christ's Mass, and certainly that's a true fact. Some say it's a religious holiday, and they can't celebrate it. So is New Year's Day, a religious holiday. So is a birthday to some people, if one ties it to that. Some say it celebrates the birth of Christ, but it's the wrong time of the year, and there's no quibble about that either, you know. Those are points about Christmas, but they're not any different from these other holidays, as we pointed out. The history is the same. And my plea today, as we get into the last half of this study, my plea today is to, let's be rational and fair in evaluating what we're dealing with. Because there has been arrogance displayed in the past. There has been condemnation where condemnation perhaps was not due. Now, my purpose today is not to change anybody's mind. My purpose is to work on our attitudes about this. I'm not interested if you believe Christmas is wrong. I respect that. And I have no problem with it. I'm not interested in trying to persuade you that you ought to go out and buy a Christmas tree. That's not the purpose. But I am interested in saying, don't condemn someone who may give somebody a gift in December. Because most do that. I remember when Christmas became a sin. Now, I know some of you go back beyond this, but I remember back in the early 70s when Christmas became a sin. Before that, it was not sinful. But after certain people decided that it was wrong, it was sinful. And so, you know, I remember before and after, and I remember the attitudes, and I remember the guilt that was imposed upon other people who did not agree or did not see it. Now, I'm not a big participator in any of these things. I was before. I haven't been since. I give my children gifts sometime around this time of year, and I don't have any problem with that. We don't put lights all over our house and do this, and I don't want you to think that that's what I'm defending. I don't do that. But I would not condemn somebody who felt they could, in all good, clear conscience, do that because they could condemn me for going to the New Year's meeting on the same basis, and I just can't see that. Now, you may say, well, you see all of this, and you put it as a whole, and then what are we going to do with it? I think we have two things to do with it. Either we understand that this attachment to these celebrations is liberty, or we give it all up. I don't see any other choice. Either it is a liberty or it's all wrong and we must give up the New Year's meeting, birthdays, and all of the other things. When this first happened, I heard families say, well, we're not celebrating Christmas any longer. We're going to take all of that money that we spent for Christmas presents and give it at birthday times. Now, if that's not beating the devil around the stump, I don't know what is. It's the same thing. Even if birthdays did not go back to the same history, it is the same thing. Think about that very carefully. We have a lot of nibblers on Christmas, and I don't have any problem with that. Some do. But most people feel they have to hide it. And I think that's unfortunate, because I believe it's a liberty if one chooses to do some of these things. We have a lot of closet celebrations. Some people do it the week before the study because they know people are coming into their homes and they don't want them to see it. And some people do it next week on New Year's. Some families say, well, we're taking our Christmas money and giving New Year's gifts. New Year's also is paganistic, if you believe that. Now, I want to take a step further on this. You know, we have some words that are very common among us that are paganistic. The word saint. was given by the pagans. Some of our New Testament words so commonly used and so well accepted either came out of paganism or Romanism. The word saint is an example. Paul used this word many times, but one place is at the beginning of the book of Ephesians where he addresses his words to saints. One writer said Paul took it right out of the terminology of pagan Greek, of the pagan Greek religions. He had to. This writer said there were no other terms which he could use so long as he was confined to the Greek language. It means devoted to the gods. That's what the word saint means, devoted to the gods. For instance, a Greek worshiper would bring an offering to the god, to a god as a gift. He devoted it to that god. It was sanctified. Or the Greeks would build a magnificent temple and devote it to a certain god. The building was thereby set apart from any secular use. And that was the way the term was used, evidently, during these times. It was separated to a religious use, consecrated to the worship, in the case of the Greeks, of whatever particular god they were talking about, and of course in the case of Christians, to the one true God. The term was also used of persons who were devoted to the service of a god. And it was meaning separated to that service or to a separation of a non-religious service and one who gave religious service. It was a distinctive term that was used in a generic way among those people. That was from Wiest, by the way. Wiest has that history, and a lot of you have Wiest in your homes, and you can look it up in Volume 1, page 16, under the Exegesis of Ephesians. Again, Wiest in Treasures from the Greek New Testament, Volume 3, the disciples were called Christians first at Antioch, Acts 11 and 26. And let me insert this. I believe sincerely that when that name was given, the mouth of the Lord named that name, and he used heathens to give it, but I believe he named that name in fulfillment of the prophecy in Isaiah 62. I don't have any doubt about that, no question about it. But it was the heathen who used the name as a distinctive term. The name was coined by the pagans of the first century to evidently identify the followers of Christ from those who worshiped the Roman emperor called Caesar. The word does not include within its meaning the idea of salvation. Did not at that time. It did not include the idea of salvation. The disciples of the Christ could either be could have been saved or unsaved as far as these people were concerned. They merely had to be followers of him, those who were under his instruction, and those who adhered to him as a leader or a teacher. That's on page 67, Treasures from the Greek New Testament in Volume 3 of Wiest. So these terms go back to, if you know, technically speaking, and that's how we get sometimes in this emotional subject. These go back to paganism, and they were given by the lips of pagans. Now I could ask you the question, how many of you have a calendar hanging in your home? We all have at least one, and many of us have a lot of calendars. Calendars go back to paganism. Several months are named after gods and goddesses. We have them on our walls. But this is the point. The fact that I have a calendar on my wall and that I have January there and that I go by January saying it's January doesn't mean I'm worshiping Janus, that god. Doesn't mean that in my heart I feel anything for Janus. It does not mean that. And yet when we get to some of these other activities in connection with the emotional holidays, we say, well, this means that you're paganistic. You've got an idol here. Not any more than you have when you have it in your home, unless that person really is bowing down before a tree or bowing, you know, whatever, worshiping those lights or whatever. Then it would be a problem. But the paganistic connotation is no longer there. Just as it isn't with January or March or June or July. July is after Caesar, not after a pagan. August is after another Caesar and so on. But the days of the week, the 7 days of the week came about as a result of being named after gods and goddesses. They too are on our calendars. For example, Wednesday was named after Mercury. Thursday was named after Thor, the Norse god of thunder, and so on. And I have all of these, but we won't get into them now. So we need to be consistent, and we need to be careful. We need to be sure of what we're saying and what we're doing. That's the point. We need to be sure that we're not condemning where we do not need to be condemning. Now, I'm going to repeat, probably right now and probably again before I close, I am not trying to lead anyone in any direction that you're not going. If you've always believed Christmas is wrong, that's fine. But I do want us to consider it carefully and be sure that we're not arrogant in dealing with other people. Now, I want to point out as we conclude our remarks some points that are found in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, first of all. I believe this is a matter of liberty. I see no tie with paganism as I look at these holidays or with Roman Catholicism. One could say, well, what about the fact that it is tied with, you know, a religious celebration? Paul kept Jewish celebrations. There's evidence in the New Testament that other Christians did Jewish things after they were converted to Christ. But the point was they were not performing these acts in obedience to God anymore. Paul shaved his head with some others one time and went into the temple to pray. Now, you can't get any more religious than that. But he did not do it as a requirement for his Christianity or his salvation. He did it to keep a vow that he had made. Circumcision. Most of us practice circumcision even today. We don't do it because it was commanded in the Old Testament law. It's a physical thing that is done, and there is not that emotional tie, nor that historical tie that once was associated with circumcision. It just is not there, and we need to be fair about that. Now, in 1 Corinthians 8, you know what's here. This is one of the great chapters on Christian liberties. Paul said, now, touching things offered unto idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. Verse 4, he said, as concerning therefore the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice unto idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is none other God but one. For though there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or in earth, as there be gods many and lords many, but to us there is but one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we by him. Howbeit there is not in every man that knowledge. Paul said there is a point of liberty. Now, not all people understand the liberty. There is not in every man that knowledge about this oneness of God. And, of course, these would be those who were converted from idolatry. For some, with conscience of the idol unto this hour, eat it as a thing offered unto an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. But meat commendeth us not to God, for neither if we eat are we the better, neither if we eat not are we the worse. But take heed, lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak. This leads to another question. What if an activity that you might participate in, say at Easter time, or at Christmas, or something else, lead another person into sin? What if another person did that because of you, and that other person did feel some idolatrous emotion in his heart? Then it's wrong, and we don't do it. That's what Paul said. If we're going to lead anybody else into sin, we give it up. No problem with that. We do that whether it's eating meat, whether it is hiding Easter eggs, or whatever it is. We give it up if it's going to lead someone astray. He made the same point in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Whatsoever sold in the shambles, that eat, asking no question for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and you be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question for conscience sake. Now these were, if you were invited over to eat with somebody and they had set some meat down, you just eat the meat, he said. It doesn't matter where it came from. But if there's somebody around that table who says, oh, that meat was offered in sacrifice to idols, feeling in their heart that if they ate that meat, they were going to be worshiping that idol, then he said, don't eat it. Because you're leading somebody astray. It's a matter of Christian liberty. And we do not do anything that's going to mislead or lead anyone into sin. Now, it's not that somebody just can, because they don't like something, talk about it. That's not the point. If it leads them into sin. Romans chapter 14, and this is our last passage. Him that is weak in the faith receives receive you, but not to doubtful disputations. For one believeth that he may eat all things, another who is weak eateth herbs. Let not him that eateth herbs despise him that eateth not. Let not him which eateth not judge him that eateth, for God hath received him. Verse 5, one day, man esteemeth one day above another, another esteemeth every day alike. Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. He that regardeth the day regardeth it unto the Lord, and he that regardeth not the day, to the Lord he does not regard it. He that eateth, eateth to the Lord, for he giveth God thanks. And he that eateth not to the Lord, he eateth not and giveth God thanks. For none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. In verse 12, so then every one of us shall give account of himself to God. Let us not therefore judge one another more, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or occasion to fall in his brother's way. In matters of liberty, as we've already pointed out, we never want to do that. Now another factor, verse 22, hast thou faith? Have it to thyself before God. Happy is he that condemneth not himself and that which he alloweth. And he that doubteth is damned if he eat, because he eateth not of faith. For whatsoever is not of faith is sin. We need to be very careful about what we do as individuals. And we need to be careful about our relationship to other people and where we might lead other people. We also need to be very careful in our consistency and being sure that we are not inconsistent. The greatest problem with this is probably with new converts. That's what some of you have told me, because they can't understand this point, especially about Christmas. Now, if it's wrong, we can explain it to them scripturally. If it's wrong, we can explain it to them scripturally. If it's a matter of liberty, we need to leave it in the realm of liberty and not discourage somebody with these things they don't necessarily have to give up, or at least immediately. Allow them to become grounded before we turn them off by these kinds of things. Then it becomes damaging to the gospel and to that soul if we go that far with it. We need to be consistent, because the many who have not been associated with us can see the inconsistencies of our attitudes. And as we said, we need to be consistent in our attitudes toward all of these. Either I think we give up all of them, or we understand they are in the realm of liberty and not in the realm of law.